Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Zinger Nation Jam-packed show today.
Yo, what's going on, guys? Happy Thursday! Woo! We are back at it. Another Thursday. Week is coming to a close. We have some hot stocks today, producer AB.
Wait, Luke, why do you look like how you look on my screen?
All right. Oh, God. You hold it down for 1 minute, AB.
All right, hold on. Rohan's coming. Oh, all right, y'all. So we've got a packed agenda today. Joining us in a couple minutes will be Lucas Downey, and then we'll be talking about Crocs, C-R-O-X, as well as Celsius Holdings, ticker C-E-L-H. Of course, we've talked a lot about Celsius the past couple weeks. The stock has gone from about $70 to $95, I think it's at today. Let me get my Benzinga Pro pulled up. We'll check in on Celsius, and then
all right, we're hitting two hot trades right off the lick, producer AB.
All right, we gotta wait till Lucas comes on to talk Celsius and Crocs. So let's talk some Palantir.
Celsius and Crocs.
Let's talk some Palantir, Luke.
Or we can just hop to Luke number one right off the cut. What do you think?
All right, let's do it.
Fine. Well, we'll do Palantir. Give us the Palantir pitch, producer AB. Stock is hot today, and guys, in the chat, drop in the tickers you're looking at. We will have time for some symbols today. Producer AB set up a new segment where we're rating some symbols. So drop your tickers in there. But Palantir AB, chart, daily candles. We got a nice 4% move today.
Yeah, Palantir is up about 4%, up to $28. Luke, something that I'd be considering doing right now with Palantir, which is something that we've talked a lot about before with the stock, is looking at selling puts. So on a day like today, when the stock's up so much, you would be able to collect a decent amount of premium. And at this price, I would say let's go down and look at like the $24 or $23 puts that I'd be willing to sell, saying, hey, look, if the stock does drop from here, which we can expect a slight pullback, that I'd be willing to buy shares of Palantir at $24, at $23.
I like that, AB. I can absolutely get behind that. Let me log into the brokerage account. Did you make that trade?
What did you say? Sorry.
Did you make that trade or no?
I did not. I actually don't have enough capital in my account right now to be selling those puts, but I will, you know, strongly endorse you if you want to make that trade.
Wait, but we're a team, AB.
Yeah, I know. I'll take equity on your trade.
Yeah, I'll sell double and you can have half.
Perfect. Luke has a little bit more buying power in his
margin, baby.
Margin, yep. Nothing wrong with selling puts on margin. I'm just kidding.
We stay over 100% always.
Cole in the chat saying he likes that call on Palantir.
Yeah,
thank you, Cole.
We sold puts against this for months at the start of the year.
Yeah, I mean that. So a couple good things with doing that with a stock like this is Palantir is volatile, so you have a higher IV, implied volatility, so you're gonna get a better premium back. You're gonna get that cash up front more so than if you pick a stock that doesn't move as much as Palantir. I don't know, say a Coca-Cola or an InBev, stocks like that aren't as volatile. You won't collect as much premium up front. So it really becomes worth it to do it on stocks that, A, you wouldn't mind owning at a lower price, and B, that are
how far out were you looking? Were you looking out to the next monthlies? So that'd be the October monthlies.
Yeah, let's see how much we can get for 20. So it looks like we would collect
no premium in here, dude.
None.
Not really. So we'd be getting $17 to take on at most $2,300 of risk.
Yeah, see, that's not worth it. Maybe if we went a little bit further out.
Look at November's. So again, so now we're picking up $60 to take on $2,300 of risk. I'm not gonna hit it right now, producer AB, but let's leave it for tomorrow. If the stock is down tomorrow and we get a little bit more juice in the October monthlies, then I think it's more interesting.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I agree.
The short put play on it, but I mean, there's just not enough love here yet.
Exactly. I think with the stock up so much today, those are kind of getting the premiums a little bit lower, but we'll keep an eye on it. But yeah, I mean, always check the risk versus reward for any trade. And for this one in particular, it doesn't look like, you know, it's worth taking on that potential risk for such a small reward.
Cool. All right. And I see somebody talking about Genius Brands too. Let's hit Genius. But first, I think we have to kick it over to Luke number one. What do you think?
Get access to actionable news and market research with all the information you need to invest smarter and profit faster. Start your free trial today at pro.benzinga.com.
Luke number one, how are we doing today?
Dude, I am doing good. And you guys over there just swinging it around, selling puts. I mean, just getting after it, dude.
We always get after it. I you know what else I did yesterday? I was feeling wild.
So what'd you do?
GME long.
Jeez. Well, look, I'm telling
First
you, man.
First time in a couple months. I'm back in it, baby.
Wow. Look at you, man. Just going where the fire's hottest, I see, right?
That's what I'm saying. And you've got some fire today. It's a stock that I've talked about many times on this show. Okay? If the listeners in the chat had gone in on this one, and in the live brokerage account, we look at it almost every day when we pull up the brokerage account. Celsius Holdings, give us a scoop, $95.
Man, this thing is a beast. And I'm telling you, like, there are some stocks that go up, and then there's some stocks that go up, and they've got everything that you want, right? So Celsius Holdings, fitness drinks, you know, they've kind of, you start to think about what are people doing right now, hot stocks, Luke? You know, they're sitting at home. They probably want to start working out. You got to get that energy level up, right? So you got to get your energy drinks. Celsius Holdings has been growing literally like a weed. And obviously you could look at the chart, but they just had second quarter earnings. I'm a big fundamentals guy. We got to look, see what the revenue growth is, what the earnings growth is. And it's been absolutely phenomenal. For the second quarter, they had revenue of $65 million. That was up 116%. When you see juice like that, plus a stock that's actually going to heaven, you know, that's a rocket you want to ride on. So additionally, I'm going to drop some Benzinga real quick. Look, you got to have your notes. When you get old, you get your notes. But you just look at the considerable beat that they had. And this was in your, you have like an earnings matrix for your Benzinga Pro.
But boom, they got it up. Let's go.
There it is. Dude, the horn. They blew out revenue estimates by 21%. And then also, you know, earnings, you could do whatever, but that was 150%. Whenever you're beating like that, and the shares are likely getting scooped up by the big money, because that's what I do professionally, right? As I follow where the big money is going. Celsius has been a magnet for that. And that's the stairway to heaven, my man.
Absolutely. All right. So are you in it yet or no?
I'm not in this one. I'm going to let you take this one, but this has all, I have so many stocks. This is just, it literally checks the box as it's got everything, the technicals, the fundamentals, everything. So,
all right. And so check this out. Here's what we have to look forward to next, right? Because it's going to be a little bit before we get the next earnings report, or before we get any like more substantive news from the company. But yeah. All right, you see the price right here, $95. Okay. If we go over to the analysts, so pull up our trusty analyst calendar. Look at this. Look at all these price targets that we have down here. All these banks have not updated their price targets on Celsius yet. We've gotten the first two through. We got this one last week. We got a $100 price target. This week we got a $115 price target. And we still have like five analysts out there with bullish ratings on the stock and price targets below where the stock is trading at right now. So hopefully in the next week or two, we'll start seeing some more of these price targets goes, and that just keeps layering in the 5% days.
They're going to be chasing their tails, and you're talking about a company, $7 billion market cap, right? Like, that's not a big number these days. You know, you can get the Benzinga crowd to, like, you know, get into there, you know, it's like you got all this like retail money that's pushing it up. It's a small company. It's growing like a weed. It's got everything. And you're showing, you know, Wall Street might be behind the ball in this thing.
100%. And what else? Oh, okay. I got this one for you. First thing, guys, in the chat, hit the like, share the stream. Okay. I'll make that ask. Our redirects on YouTube are all broken right now. So I don't know. We need some extra help with the likes and the shares, but regardless, my mom, 60 years old,
wow,
consumed the first energy drink of her life 2 weeks ago. Okay. 2 weeks ago, first energy drink of her life. And it was a Celsius. Did she like it? She thought it was fine. Is she going to be drinking it every day? I don't think so. But again, she never had a Red Bull. She's never had a Monster. Sure as shit has never had a Bang Energy. and again, like that was like another psychological, like anecdotal piece of evidence of like, holy shit. Okay. This one's going somewhere.
That, listen, that's what's happening. She probably was at this supermarket, right? Because you're seeing, like, you go down the aisles and you see this big old display for Celsius, you know. And look, your mom, she's like, you know what? I'll give this a shot. There's gonna be a lot of moms doing this. I'm telling you, man.
100%. And if we take a look at that one, shout out Jonah Lupton. Do you know Jonah Lupton?
No, I don't. I don't think so.
He's the one who got us into this one. And it's been a really nice 31% run over, I don't know, maybe the past month or so.
Winning.
So big shout out to Jonah on that one.
No, that's good. Listen, that's, you got to follow the juice, man. So I think this thing's got somewhere to be.
All right. Higher. And I'm in the C's of my portfolio.
Yep.
All right. And you have another C stock, and it's one that I don't own.
This all is right? one.
Here are the C stocks that I own.
Yeah.
You have a fifth C. Let's hear about that one.
So this one is, I mean, everybody knows about Crocs, man. I mean, listen, we can only see you from waist up. There's a chance that you're probably wearing Crocs right now.
It's a small chance, but there's a chance.
Non-zero. It's a non-zero chance that Luke is wearing Crocs right now.
Hate it or love it, they are exploding in terms of, I mean, look, it's at an all-time high. You pull up a five-year chart. You want to talk about the stairway to heaven. I mean, this thing is a monster.
Five-year chart, monthly candles here, okay? No, I'm sorry. These must be weeklies. Weekly candles, five-year chart. Check it out.
Look, I mean, there's a lot. Very few stocks look like this, right? And so if you're going to follow stocks that look like this, at least they need to have fundamentals that actually back it up. And Crocs just had an investor day. Oh, my gosh. We got to get the notes out. But basically, here's what they said. They came out and said, like, up till 2026, they gave guidance. They're like, here's what I think we're going to do. Revenues to grow over $5 billion. And right now, you know, they're like in the mid $1 billion. Okay? So they're telling you what's happening, Hot Stocks, Luke. They're telling you.
Wait. So I'm looking at trailing 12-month revenue right here. And what does that sum to? That sums to like $1.8 billion. They're 1.8 saying it's going billion. To 5.
They're saying it's going to 5. So it's like a 17% CAGR. That's 2026.
Okay. All right. And so 5 years.
They're saying annual free cash flow should be in excess of $1 billion, right?
All right. Let's do some math on this one. So, okay. So they don't pay dividends now.
Nope.
Do I have a share count handy? But I have a shares outstanding. So I have 62 million shares outstanding. They're going to do $1 billion of cash flow. All right, there's $1 billion divided by 62 million. I just want to see what would that make an annual dividend if they paid that all. So that would be a $16 per share dividend if they hit that and then paid it all out.
It's like 10% of where the stock is right now. It's gorgeous. Okay. You know, that, I mean, that's a winner. And you're talking about a market cap sub $10 billion. Okay, so we're not talking about something huge here. It doesn't take a big leap to see where this stock is actually going. And you just pulled up the chart, and I think that there is a lot of runway for this company. I mean, this could be your fifth C, is what I'm trying to say.
All right. And shout out to Money Mitch in the chat. He's saying press 1 if you own or have ever owned Crocs. Press 2 if you haven't. I'm curious where the crowd is out. And I've got a story for this one, Luke, number one as well.
Let's go.
Which is last year. I don't know if you recall. It was last year Christmas time. It was like the Post Malone Crocs were like the craziest sales event in the history of retail.
Sure, sure.
That's an exaggeration, but it was wild. So I walked into a Crocs store on Christmas Eve because I'm a last minute shopper. And I was just sort of screwing around and I'm like, hey, do you guys have any of the Post Malone Crocs? And the dude goes, it's $500 cash only and you'll have to meet me in the back room.
Dang.
I swear to God. He goes, in size 14 only.
They're hotter than NFTs, man.
Yeah, he's like size 14, $500 cash only, and I'll meet you in the back room. And I'm just like, oh, sorry, I'm just fucking around, dude. I'm not actually.
Those were definitely a pair that he had bought for like $100, and like he wanted to keep them, but he was like, I'd be willing to sell them. All right, Luke, look at this real quick. I already got it pulled up. So we have here the Post Malone Crocs. Let me find right here. Sold out. Look at how many of these. Let me zoom in a couple times. How many of these special edition Crocs are sold out? Let's just go down the list.
What other special edition? Like, what's a special edition that I could get behind, Producer AB?
Well, here, I've got these J. Biebs ones for you. Shout out Justin Bieber in the chat. These are also sold out. Cars, Disney Pixar Cars. I would do some Lightning McQueen Crocs. I would definitely do these.
Bieber one is weird. You're like, you're wearing another dude's shoes. That's
yeah, we've got like some weird. Grateful Dead Chinatown Market ones. These are cool, but they're also sold out. The Post Malone ones are pretty, I do have to say, there's like a little chain that comes from here and connects, but those are sold out. Luke Combs, someone else in the chat was talking about how the Luke Combs one got sold out.
So weird for me.
Let's see, let's try to find one we can get behind. Carrots sold out.
Look at this, man.
Okay, Vera Bradley. Look, these have some pretty little flowers on there. Not another guy's shoes, so we can...
All right, wait, keep going. Go down one more row. This is looking mean.
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
There we go. Now we're talking.
Dang.
Sold out, though.
Sold out. You can't get them, man.
All right, hold on. I'm going to go to another stock that I like, but I'm not in. It's called KFC Crocs eBay.
KFC Crocs.
AFC Crocs and men's shoes.
I'm still looking for what. Okay, here's another Grateful Dead.
$120.
Dang.
That's not bad. We could get
What about this one? Like, is this somebody literally just
custom put KFC
drumsticks on it? I might be able to get behind the KFC Crocs.
I mean... Luke, I think that'd be pretty funny if you wore those to work one day.
killing me.
All right, I sort of like this one. Do they give quarterly guidance? Do we get guidance for the holiday sales season yet?
Well, I mean, that's going to be a big season, obviously. But yeah, they're probably going to give something. But look, every time they give guidance, they have to keep, you know, updating it. You know, this is just one of those things. Wall Street gets, you know, they're way behind. This is a major multi-year growth story here. I mean, you could see it. You got KFC, Luke Combs. I mean, they know this is juice, man.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. And the chat is pretty 50-50.
Well, I mean,
we have one chatter whose opinion we respect the most. It's Shelly. She's saying Crocs are gross.
You got to follow the money, though, right?
Just the elite out there. Okay. All right, I dig it.
Listen, we'll find out next time I come on. If you have a fifth C, then I will have done my job. But if you don't, you know.
I think what I'm looking for here with Crocs, my catalyst, is like when they announce new – because obviously a lot of these promotions, like branding deals, they've done with Justin Bieber.
Those branding deals are so crazy.
They've worked so well. I mean, the Post Malone's ones have gone crazy. And they sell out like instantly.
I mean, my Post Malone story was, yeah, literally the dude who works there bought the inventory, right? Checked himself out as a customer. And then was just selling them for cash to people coming to his store.
Right.
$500.
Rare commodity.
So yeah, I mean, I think that's a big, honestly, like catalyst for me. Like I'm trying to think of a big name. You know, if someone like Addison Rae from TikTok or Olivia Rodrigo like puts out their own Crocs and all of a sudden.
What about Spencer Israel Crocs line?
Yeah, I would buy them, but I don't know how. I think they would do well.
Okay.
The other thing too, guys, you know, you might not be there yet, but the kids, the kids market for Crocs is big and they're all going back to school, right? And they got to buy children? Those little trinkets. Yeah, I got a few, man.
How old?
I got a 6-year-old, got a 4-year-old, got a 1-year-old.
Oh, God, that's great.
They like their shoes.
I would love to babysit sometime. I love little children. I think like I'm all right, we don't need to go, you know, I'm ready.
You'd be the third Luke. I have a son. His name is Luke. So this could be
all right. Like Luke number 3.
Yeah, yeah. Get behind it. Get behind Crocs. I think it's a great story here, man. You know, it's all lining up.
All right, Luke number 1. We appreciate you coming on, giving us the Celsius pitch, giving us the Crocs pitch. I'm going to throw this out to the chat, guys. If you had to pick between one of the two, Celsius or Crocs, which one is it? Put it in there. All right. And then also I learned that I'm demoted to Luke number 3, which is fine.
That's all right. That's a good place to be. I can promise you that. Yep. Yeah.
Cool. Look at that chart. Look at this. Chris Kache in the chat. Shout out Chrisopedia. Kendall Jenner was on Jimmy Fallon last night talking about Crocs. The shoes are also showing strong sales in the UK after some of the Love Island contestants wore them. Long Island is, of course, the British version of The Bachelor. So it looks like we're getting a lot of pop culture love from Crocs right now, whether it be from Kendall Jenner on Jimmy Fallon or on Love Island. So, again, my catalyst for this, if I'm getting in, is I want to see some more of these branding deals that have done so well in the past, some big names come in. But Luke will definitely be Luke number 1. We'll definitely be watching this one. Hot Stocks Luke and I will be.
Listen, just watch it. I'm telling you, man. I mean, just look at the chart. Look at the stock. Just look how it trades, right? Just look at that. You know, that's all you need to know.
Yep. And I'm a big fan of that. I mean, both stocks that we looked at today, Luke, Celsius and Crocs have had monster, runs already, but I like that. I like buying high and selling higher. There's a reason that these stocks are performing so well, and it's because they are strong companies and good value in the stock.
That's honestly, if I could teach people that, then I've done a good thing. You want to buy high, sell higher. Don't buy low, buy high.
Yeah. Boom. Low stocks are low for a reason.
Boom. There it is. Wow.
Yeah, I'm not just here for nothing, Luke number 1.
Just there's a lot of stuff in there that, you know, it's just amazing. No, that's really how you make big money in stocks. Don't go for the crap. Go for the juice, man.
Oh, some Yeezy Crocs. I know at least Hot Stocks Luke would buy those. I don't know if Luke number 1 would buy those too.
I could definitely get behind them, but those are going to be, you know, hard to get, back alley NFT type stuff, you know.
Yep. All right, Luke Downey, appreciate you hopping on with us as always, sir.
Hey, I appreciate you, man. Stay bullish, all right?
All right, I will.
See you, bud.
All right, guys. We have a couple big interviews coming up. I've got 2 things to do before that. 2 things, 2 minutes. Let's go fast. I saw somebody early in the chat talking about Genius Brands, ticker GNUS. This is a stock that I'm long. It has not done much for me. This is a 1-year daily candle chart right here. You know, we talk about some of the winners. This is just a, you know, hanging out sideways for quite a while now. Why am I long Genius? I have a general thesis on the space. And what's given this thesis a lot of validation is that I've seen PE firms going out and buying companies with the same thesis. And in short, the thesis is this: the rise of platforms and services where people are consuming content is creating a need for more content producers. Okay. It's not just the linear television. We still have that. That's still going to exist. Plus, you have so many dozens and dozens and dozens of digital-only platforms, technologies, services, etc. So the need for content is going to increase. And so that's why I'm generally bullish on the space. That's the thesis on the space. Genius Brands is the stock that I choose to get bullish on the space. It's how I actually executed that thesis. Why do I like Genius Brands in particular? 2 things. Executive team, amazing, long track record of getting deals done and making money. 2, great branding partnerships. They have tons and tons of celebrities, brands, etc., that they can leverage that nobody else can. So I think that puts them in a very good position to continue to create content and then license it out. Any thoughts on Genius, producer AB?
I agree with you. I mean, I think this is one that I wouldn't necessarily buy as like a swing trade or anything. I don't really have any, you know, midterm thesis on it. But long term, there are going to be kids in the United States that are going to need to consume content. It can't all come from Disney, right? It can't all come from Netflix. There will have to be other brands that step up and start taking some of this market share.
Yep, somebody's putting Shaq in there.
Yeah, and I mean, look, we've talked to Andy Hayward. We've talked to the executive team. They have a good track record. As you mentioned, they have experience creating storylines, creating brands that people come back to. And I think a lot of the numbers that Andy shared with us last time he was on the show were really good indicators that this could be a growing business. But look, I mean, like I said, the only way I'm getting in this stock is just as a long-term, you know, I mean, the stock's $1.50, so I could buy 100 shares for, you know, $150 and just let it sit there and hope that in 20 years.
I was really worried you were going to get that math wrong.
Yeah.
You did a good job. I was just.
I could see, like.
You paused for a moment. You paused for a moment, okay?
It wouldn't be the first time that I got some math wrong on this show, but hey.
All right, and now my second thing. Two things, 2 minutes, guys. I do have a really big ask. This one is a sincere ask, and it is somewhat of a lift. We're trying to collect some user feedback. So could everybody please fill out this survey? I just put it in the chat. It is going to take a minute to do. It's going to take literally 10 minutes, okay? It's not a two-question, you know, you're done in less than a minute survey. It is going to take literally 10 minutes, guys. But it would mean a lot to me. I mean, we're out here every single day producing all this content for free and just trying to make everybody's trading lives a better place. And so it would mean a lot to us if you could go ahead, take the 10 minutes and fill the survey out. We are going to be giving away 3 one-year subscriptions to Benzinga Pro. We're only collecting 2,000 responses, okay? So 3 subscriptions being given away, 2,000 responses. A good chunk of those people already have Pro. I guess those people can still be entered too. So you have a decent shot at winning. Okay. So that's my ask, guys. If you could please, we have 150 people here. All 150 people could go and fill that out. It would make my life a lot easier.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores led by Walmart and Target are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Beautiful. All right, Luke. Well, we've got a couple big interviews coming up. First, we've got Paul Scherer joining us from Joby, ticker G or J-O-B-Y. The company recently, you know, switched tickers from a SPAC to J-O-B-Y.
It's a good one. This is a good one, AB.
I'm very excited to talk straight with Paul because I have so many questions about this company, about the business. About the industry, really, because we've seen a lot of rumors about electric, you know, aviation. And look, it's finally coming to fruition. It's 2021. We're going to see a lot of developments in this industry in the next decade or so. And now is a time that investors have that they can get in the door, their foot in the door in the first inning. So, Luke, I think without further ado, let's bring Paul on. Hey, Paul, how's it going?
Hi, how are you, Aaron? Thanks a lot for having me.
Of course. Thank you for taking time out of your busy Thursday to join us. Sure. Just for some of our investors that are watching that may not be familiar, can you just give us the quick background on what Joby is and what it is y'all are doing?
Sure. So Joby is developing an all-electric vertical takeoff and landing passenger aircraft that's really optimized for aerial ride sharing. We've been working on this project for 10 years in sort of quasi-stealth, building out the right technology and what we think is the right vehicle and finding the right way to certify it. So our goal is going to be able to is to certify that aircraft and then operate the service, delivering a faster cheaper, and zero emissions mode of transportation to large numbers of people in 2024.
Got it. And I mean, so what with that timeline, if you're I've seen that the company is trying to get, you know, the ability to be able to, for people to use Joby as a ride share in by 2024. Is in the next 3 years, is it going to be more of a task to get the technology where it needs to be, or more from like the liability, you know, insurance, like that type of policy?
Yeah. So I would say that we feel really good about where the technology stands in terms of its readiness. We made a number of announcements really just over the last 6 months that I think demonstrate that the aircraft is performing as we set out to deliver 8.5 years ago. So we've been able to highlight that we're able to do 150 miles of a flight on a single charge. We've showcased that the noise profile is very low, less than 65 decibels at its loudest, and really almost silent in flyover, both of which are really important in terms of getting to high frequency, high density operations in and around the places that people want to live. So I think we feel good about where we stand on the technical readiness of the aircraft itself. What we've got to focus on over the next 3 years are obviously executing on our certification plan with the FAA, which we believe is critically important, obviously giving people the confidence to get into this brand new mode of transportation. And then two, building out the infrastructure that we'll need to deliver a service. So that means finding the right launch markets, finding the right routes within those cities, and then working with partners or ourselves, building out the takeoff and landing infrastructure necessary to deliver a really valuable service to consumers.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's what's so fascinating to me and a lot of other investors is that just, I mean, this is completely different. Like, this is completely reimagining how we are currently doing rideshare and just transportation in general. So for you, what does the end goal look like? I mean, is it in every big city people are able to order a Joby instead of an Uber? Or is it, you know, that completely... I guess what I'm curious for is how do you get that price point to match that of what would be an Uber or a Lyft?
Yeah, so sort of two parts to your question. I think where the company is going. Look, we aim to build a transportation solution that's really suitable for any trips between 5 and 150 miles. So that might be trips within cities, say getting downtown to the airport, but also connecting cities to suburbs, and in some cases, cities to nearby cities when we think about the longer distance of those range. So that's a pretty broad swath of trips that we think this sort of service is really directly applicable to. You asked a little bit about price, and look, right behind safety, right behind noise, the next real goal for the company was to ensure that this was a service that was progressively more affordable over time. And that starts with the specs of the aircraft itself. Part of the reason for greater capacity, longer range, which means shorter charge times, and faster speeds is all to really optimize the operating economics so that we can start at an affordable price point and get increasingly affordable over time.
Got it. I mean, yeah, this is just so fascinating to me. And I want to go back to kind of what I mentioned as far as, you know, from now until 2024, I'm sure there's still a lot of legal, you know, things you have to work through. What are the biggest holdups in terms of, I guess, like insurance, liability, things like that? Like, do you have to go to each city and say like, hey, we need to be cleared? Or is it once you have the FAA, since that's the federal administration, you're good to operate in like any state, any city?
Yeah. So it's a really good question. When we think about the regulatory side of the business, one of the, you know, the principal thing that we're going to be laser focused on is executing on our FAA certification plan for the aircraft. Airspace is the operation of aircraft is generally done at a federal level. So when you have FAA certification, you're able to operate anywhere within the airspace in the U.S. So that's the sort of principal goal. And we hit a big and important milestone on that effort just late last year with our receipt from the FAA of a Stage 4 G1 issue paper. So total term of art, G1, but you can think about it as the rule set, the set of tests that we need to do at the component level and then at the vehicle level to prove the safety of the aircraft and get type certification. So what that means for us over the next 2 years is really careful program management of that testing, making sure the components are showing up at the right time, that we've got enough time to do the testing that's required, munch that data, present it back to the FAA for essentially the progressive sign-off across all of the components of the vehicle. We built up a relatively large team here at Joby over 850 people, including hundreds of folks that have experience certifying aircraft before. And that's going to be the principal effort that a big portion of the team is squarely focused on over the next stretch. We've got to make sure that we get that right. You also asked about the other pieces of regulatory. There's an operating certificate in order to operate the airline itself. And then there's also important work to be done on community acceptance. A lot of that is really driven by noise. And we had an opportunity even just last week to wrap up testing with NASA. NASA has been doing some work on airspace management and assessing the noise of this brand new mode of transportation. And we were the first company to go through the sort of full FAA testing envelope, NASA testing envelope, which I think is going to be important in terms of giving people an understanding of how this is going to fit into their communities.
Got it. Yeah. And I mean, so moving away from Joby real quick and more just looking at the industry as a whole, where do you see, electric aviation just in the next, say, 5 years? So it's 2021 right now, September 2026, 5 years from now, where do you see electric aviation?
So from the Joby perspective, you know, we intend to be sort of a few years into commercialization of this aerial ride sharing service. I think you'll see us in a number of cities sort of in that period with a significant number of aircraft in each of those individual markets. I think our approach is going to be to go deeper into individual markets, individual cities before going broad, because we think that as you build up a density of aircraft in a given market, a density of takeoff and landing locations, that becomes a service that's progressively more valuable to end consumers. It's something that they can rely on to get from where they are to where they need to go. So I think you'll see some scaled service in a handful of cities as we think 5 years out. And then obviously the next 5 years after that will be around extending the network into larger and larger numbers of cities over time.
And as far as, do you see in the future that we could have, the big passenger planes that we're accustomed to be electric, or is that not feasible?
So we're certainly looking at a number of different technologies, whether it's improved battery energy, improved energy density on the battery side of the equation, other modes of energy storage, to think about how we extend the range of electric or sort of sustainable aviation over time. But we need to be really focused, obviously, on certifying this aircraft and ensuring that we're able to demonstrate the utility of this brand new category of aircraft with the batteries and sort of energy density that exists today. And then I think we'll be thinking about longer range, greater payload, sort of over a slightly longer arc.
Got it. And then as far as, is LA kind of the first city that you're looking at going live here, or where are the prospective locations that you look to kind of be testing this service out at?
Yeah, so obviously alongside the aircraft, I think one of the things that's really important in terms of delivering a really valuable service and a profitable service and a service that's increasingly affordable to folks is making sure that you really understand the right routes, the demand on those routes in any city that you launch in. So we had an opportunity to sort of accelerate that effort inside of Joby with our acquisition late last year of the Uber Elevate business from Uber. So Elevate was a group inside of Uber that was working on a number of these problems. How do we sort of map demand within given cities? How do we think about route structures for a given network? And how do we think about sort of dynamic pricing and moving people from cars into aerial vehicles and back down to cars again, as we think about the multimodal pieces of a journey? And alongside the aircraft, getting that right is really important too. So we've been doing really careful work on cities like LA, New York, Miami. We think about this as a service that's really applicable for any significant city here in the US and abroad. And we're trying to make sure that we do careful work to map demand before we obviously jump into saying, oh, we're going to launch here or launch there. It's really about making sure that we have the right aircraft and the right network to operate that aircraft in any city that we launch in.
And I know, Paul, you mentioned it earlier, but what'd you say the right now, the kind of like longest flight that one of these Joby aircrafts has taken?
So we've announced 154 miles on a single charge. And that's in the sort of mid period of our testing program. So we're going to be continuing to sort of work on an expansion of that test campaign over time. So there may be announcements over the next stretch around sort of the continued work that we're doing on testing the aircraft that we have now.
So essentially, you know, at 150, so in a city like LA, someone who is maybe going from somewhere like, you know, you could hypothetically go from somewhere like San Diego to, you know, bypass all that traffic, and it would be, you know, a lot quicker than, you know, sitting in a car stuck in traffic in LA. I think that's where it becomes most interesting to me is like, okay, do you want to wait for 2.5 hours in traffic or hop in this aircraft that, and it goes up to 200 miles per hour. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So significantly faster than helicopters that exist today. And you're right. That's one of the important use cases that we think about for this sort of service. It's not just about getting inside of getting around inside of crowded cities, but also connecting cities that might be near each other. So you mentioned LA to San Diego, LA to Palm Springs. Those are all sort of interesting routes in that market. I know that you guys are in Detroit. I mean, you can imagine Detroit to Cleveland in something like 30 minutes as opposed to 3 hours on the ground.
Yeah.
Routes like that will also be really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, or something maybe even like, I don't know how, you know, close Chicago is on a beeline, but Chicago and Detroit, you have to drive all the way around the southern side of Lake Michigan, where if you take a flight, you just go straight across. So it's like so much more easier to fly to Chicago than it is to drive. So that could potentially be really interesting too. And Paul, I guess my last question is just, you know, I know you mentioned safety and that's a big, so for, I'm sure for, if you do polling on consumers or potential consumers, I'm sure safety is at the top of the, of most people's list. So, you know, between now and when this rideshare service goes live, I guess, you know, what all is being done just to ensure consumer safety?
Yeah, so we really started with safety as a sort of number one priority as we thought about the design of the aircraft and our approach to commercializing the service. So you'll notice that there's 6 propellers across the vehicle. That's to create redundancy. In the event that there's individual failure across any of the systems on the vehicle, it can continue to operate nominally. And that stands in stark contrast to sort of single engine planes or certainly helicopters that have many single points of failure. We also knew from the get-go that really embracing the FAA certification process would be important in terms of getting to the big market opportunity that we're all excited about. So we've been in informal conversations with the FAA for a number of years, a formal certification process with the FAA for 2 years. And we're committed to making sure that we do the work that's necessary to prove to their confidence and certainly to our confidence that this is a vehicle that is sufficiently safe for wide-scale operation. And that's really going to be one of the principal goals of the company over the next stretch is to do that testing, to give folks the confidence that this is a safe mode of transportation.
Yeah, and I'm glad Odessa in the chat asked a question that I was actually going to be a follow-up to my final question. And that was just, you know, about weather and saying like, you know, what's the worst, you know, if it's like slightly raining out, you know, would that hold you guys up or how are you guys looking in that regard?
Yeah, so we'll be operating initially under what's called sort of visual flight rules and then a supplemental certification to our first type certification, IFR rules. That's going to allow for pretty wide range of operations in lots of different weather conditions. And, you know, you can think about it as pretty similar to the way that planes and helicopters operate today. We actually wanted to make sure that the operations of the aircraft were not dissimilar from the types of vehicles that are already operating in and around cities today. So we tried to make both the way in which the aircraft is flown and the operational approach as similar as we could to those things that currently exist.
Got it. You know, Paul, we're running out of time, but I'm realizing now that I have more questions. So I hope we can get you back on the show some point soon. You know, anytime that Joby has news or developments, please let me know. We'd love to have you back on. I mean, to me, this is like one of the coolest things going on right now. You know, specifically what you guys are doing at Joby, but just in general, the electric aviation. I saw some headlines today about Rolls-Royce, what they're trying to do with an electric plane. I don't know if you're following that news. But guys, Zinger Nation out there, ticker JOBY on the New York Stock Exchange. Paul Sciarra, thank you for joining us on the Power Hour today.
Thanks a lot, Aaron. And I share your excitement about kind of what this moment means for a real sort of brand new future in sustainable aviation.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of people, this was something that, you know, they think, oh, you can only see in Back to the Future or whatever. And now it's like, okay, wow, like we're looking around and there are actual electric, you know, aviation crafts that were. What about, I guess, like final question is, have you guys started working on any like sort of like self-driving thing as well?
So we made the pretty considered decision a number of years ago that the right way to commercialize this initially is to start with a trained pilot in seat. That's about giving passengers the sort of same level of comfort that they have kind of getting into a commercial aircraft, but also because the pilot's really important when we think about interacting with air traffic control as it currently exists. We're excited about progressive pilot assist technologies and certainly a potential autonomous future, but we know that that's going to require some big changes in the way that the FAA and the aircraft traffic control is operated. So we want to make sure that we can start with a service as soon as possible, and then I think we'll be thinking about sort of potential improvements over time.
Got it. All right, Paul. Well, thank you again for joining us. Looking forward to having you on again in the future. Have a great rest of your Thursday. Thanks for taking time out of your busy day to join us.
Thanks a lot, Aaron. Appreciate it.
No problem. All right, y'all. That was Paul Sciarra, Executive Chairman of Joby, ticker J-O-B-Y, on the New York Stock Exchange. Go check it out if you haven't already. Crazy cool company, what they're able to do on the electric helicopter, airplane. I don't even know what you call it. It's some sort of aviation. Coming up right now, we have the CEO of American Pacific Mining Co. Guys, take a look at this chart. This stock was hanging out right here for a long time, and we've just absolutely broken out, up another 17% today. We love to bring you high flyers. So without further ado, going to go ahead and bring on my man, Warwick Sims. Warwick, do it on this beautiful Thursday.
Hey, man, I don't think you could have given me a better introduction, so thank you very much.
We try. We like to keep the energy flowing on the, you know, on the power hour there. Too much financial content out there is dry and boring. We do not, strive to be that here at Benzinga. We strive to be different. So, Warwick, off the bat, we're looking at the chart, up 16.7% right now. What's driving that that stock movement?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think if I'll today we had a significant acquisition that we announced. Let me step back and talk chart for 2 seconds, if you like. If you look, as you pointed out, there was a long base period there. You know, during that time, we knew we had great assets. We feel we have a very, very good team. But stock dynamics had played into it at that point where we'd had a financing that came free trading. We had bought an asset for shares. They came free trading. So we got this long base. At where you can see there at the end of May, we brought in a new strategic investor named Michael Gentile, who's been incredibly helpful for the company, has opened a lot of doors, and the company's starting to execute and bring in and closing on new transactions. So that's where you see that sort of, you know, the longer the base, the higher the space. We've got that opportunity now to really, move forward being well capitalized and having some great assets.
Warwick, you know your way around a chart, don't you? The bigger the base, the bigger the space.
You know what? It's not totally my forte, but I know, I suppose, enough to be dangerous.
Enough to be dangerous. Yeah, we actually have a show following this called Get Technical, where we talk all about technical indicators. And that's one of our things that we talk about a lot, that, hey, look, the longer the base is, the longer there's this like space of consolidation, the bigger the run up will be. So we definitely see that here. And you mentioned Gentile. He came on as an advisor, but he's also a big stockholder, correct?
Yeah, so Michael came in as a 19.9% shareholder, real gentleman, great guy to work with, has done a lot of introductions for the company, put us in front of some really, really smart money who understands the space, understands the projects incredibly well. And you see that in the chart. And that's been, you know, that's been obviously a godsend for us. The company is now well capitalized. We've got 4 assets in the Western U.S. One partnered with Rio Tinto, which is the second largest mining company in the world. They're exploring for us down in Montana, and then 3 assets down in Nevada. We focus on high grade assets in the Western U.S., primarily gold and silver, although the asset in Montana is gold copper. As I say, we made an announcement aftermarket last night about picking up we owned some ground down here and picked some ground up to the north of it. That's incredibly high grade that we're very excited to get out and drill. And that certainly captured the market's attention today.
Yeah. Essentially, doubling the amount of land that you have in, where is this again? Somewhere in.
Yeah, it's called Elko, Nevada. So very much a mining centric town. Newmont has one of their main offices there. Actually, my business partner was the head of exploration in the Western U.S. for Newmont. So it was his job to go out and find these assets that Newmont would look to buy. They're looking for stuff that's 3 million ounces of gold plus to begin with. So we had these opportunities to see a lot of assets that are a bit smaller, but can grow. And that's really our sweet spot. We go in and pick those up. We see them grow. And with that, you see the company grow. So that's really where our strategic advantage is his knowledge of the Western U.S. And that's worked really well for us.
Yeah, I mean, so Warwick, just one of the things for investors, I guess, maybe that are considering buying different, you know, mining companies or junior miners, is that you're buying into some of the risk that you're buying into is saying like, okay, will there be gold and silver found as much as they hope there will be in this land? Why do you think that right now is kind of a time that investors can invest in American Pacific and be confident that, hey, look, this land that, you know, these announcements will pan out and will be end up being a good investment?
Yeah, great question. In particular for sort of a US-based trading audience that maybe isn't mining focused, there's specific things that if you're looking at this space in the exploration space, which is inherently risky, that you should look for. And I'll throw a few of those out. American Pacific has these, but just in general, look for companies that already have a major involved. Quite often when you're exploring, you're going to look to build it up and you're going to look to sell it to a major. The majors won't put in money unless they feel that they A, can find it, and B, can build it. They de-risk it for you significantly. We have that in the case of Rio Tinto. They may spend up to $30 million US to earn 70% of this asset. To give you an idea, the company's got about a $100 million Canadian market cap today. A good example of this was a company called Reservoir Minerals. They were partnered on an asset similar to ours. They had 30%. They sold that 30% for 360 million US after more drilling. So those are the types of multiples that you can get as you get success. So that's one. Two, you want to find companies that have good track records of success. I've just sort of pointed to Eric. Three, strategic investors, guys who have come in, put in their money that have been successful before. Michael Gentile is a great example. He put money into a company called Arizona Metals. It's done really well. Put money in at 20 cents. I think it's trading around $5 now. So he's put his money in here. One other thing that I'll say that for guys who are looking at space, there's a lot of these sort of investment newsletter writers who aren't, you can't pay them. They just review the company, make a decision if they're going to cover it or not. That's a great way to play the space too, because you can kind of learn about different companies and find ones in the flavor that you like. There's a lot of different guys. Peter Grandich is a good example, et cetera, that cover American Pacific as well. So there's some reasons for American Pacific, but just for a general kind of overview, those are things to look at where you can play your best hand when you're looking at exploration companies.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I'm glad that you perfectly answered my question there. Kind of along the same lines, some of this answer might be similar, but what would a retail investor, like most of our audience, what would be the benefit to buying a stock like American Pacific as opposed to just going out and buying gold straight up?
Yeah, great question. So I think, again, when you're buying juniors, we'll refer to them as juniors, junior explorers, you're looking for that 10x lift. That's really what you go in looking for. When you're buying physical or you're buying an ETF, you're looking for that. You believe in the commodity and you want to see that slow, steady pace upwards. Look, we'd love to see gold break $2,000 an ounce, maybe get to $2,200, right? That's a nice lift from $1,800, but when you're looking at American Pacific 4 months ago when it was 13, 14 cents and now it's trading at a dollar. I'm using the Canadian version, but you can convert down to the US. You're getting those large lifts. And that's really where, those are the big gains that people get very excited about. It's risky. It's inherently risky because it's exploration. God either put the gold there or he didn't. and you got to go out and try to make that discovery. So that's the risk. There's no doubt. But that's where you can see these big lifts.
Yeah. I mean, I actually, people are giving me some crap in the chat because I actually bought some of this junior miner Harmony yesterday and it was having a bad day today, down 7%. So I wanted to selfishly for myself ask you if you know anything about this company and if you want to tell me, hey, Aaron, you should probably sell that.
You know, I hate to say this, but I actually don't know them all that well. So it's hard for me to comment. Here's what I will say. It's a terrible day for gold miners. The commodities was off $30 when I looked this morning. So the whole sector is red, other than American Pacific's been up nicely, which, you know, which is great.
But that means if it was a good day for gold miners, American Pacific might be up 30% right now, you know.
I did make that comment when I woke up this morning.
So you and I are seeing eye to eye.
Agreed.
We are running out of time here, Warwick. How's your buddy Jay over at Visibility doing?
Jay's fantastic, man. That company's done incredibly well. It's had a really big run since it's been on the show. They're really building out nicely. That partnership with Anheuser-Busch has worked out great for them. They've just announced a deal with Austin. It's called Austin GIS that they're part owner of. HCL is part owner, Tech Mahindra, and another Fortune 500 to be mentioned here shortly. They own 10% of the company. And I believe they said that it's going to do around $28 million in revenue starting from September 15th to the end of this year. So significant revenue coming for them and coming forward. So I love that stock. That's a great company.
You gotta talk to Jay. You gotta be able to get some kickback for being able to come on and answer questions like that about a different.
Listen, there better be a nice bottle of wine at the end of that from Jay. I'll be sure to let him know.
He's a great guy, by the way. So I appreciate you making the introduction to him. I really enjoyed talking to him. And you as well, Warwick.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being on. Cheers.
Of course. Yeah. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday.
Thank you.
All right, y'all. That was Warwick Smith, CEO of American Pacific Mining Co., ticker USGBF, trading on the OTC, up 17, almost 18% now. Chart is looking strong as hell. All right, y'all. It is 1 o'clock. That means it is our time to go.
Get access to actionable news and market research with all the information you need to invest smarter and profit faster. Start your free trial today at pro.benzinga.com.